Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Brooke, I would just like to say that in every universe, I would have loved podcasting with you.
Wow, that's mm-hmm. so sweet. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, in every... In every universe, like, it's these little decisions cause the branching multiverse. So I wonder what the percentages of how many of them. That's like the
The thing is,
that's
in
the
every
Alphaverse.
Universe, it would happen, which is embarrassing. Yeah. Like, the movie's actually just, like, a really bad expose on us. Like, there's all these multiverses that can happen, but in every multiverse, we're still podcasting, and people are like, damn, they're, like, they fucking suck.
It's, like,
they're
as
losers.
Intrinsic to us as, like, you know,
right.
our identities. Yeah. Anyway.
And people are fantastic. Like, and this is why we're listening. We love multiverses.
Wow, Liam loved that. If it's not clear.
Or hated. I think hated.
If it's not clear from Jordan's quote of the day. Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
We love talking about cinema. We love talking mm-hmm. about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. And here we are talking about it today. On mic.
Today in this universe,
in
baby.
In this universe, here, right here in 2024. Today
what?
We are discussing Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. It's been a full year.
Mm-hmm.
The discourse is over.
We can
the Oscars have been won. We can chat about it. And we are joined by the wonderful Liam Voyak and Yutaka Tamanaha from The Horror Hour. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We are so honored for you to be here. So we literally, this episode is so overdue. It's actually, it's very rude of us. But we met doing horror trivia. We had a great time. And we were like, okay, boys, who wants to come? Hang? Who wants to come chat? And
they were like, yeah. We don't. We actually will not come on the podcast.
But this is a pretty seminal movie. I'm really glad that you picked it because I feel like a lot of people have been steering clear.
Yes.
Well, I almost was like, let's switch to past lives. But I was like, no, let's not do that.
I guarantee that. Although, did it hit?
Might have hit 1,000.
Let me check. So our quote unquote rules for this podcast, how ridiculous for a podcast to have rules, is that
in every universe, a podcast must have rules.
Is that
does it?
Our stuff has to have hit 1,000 screens. But the thing is, like, when something is an Oscar potential, suddenly those screens really start racking up.
Those numbers. They got to juice those numbers.
Sorry, Past Lives topped out at 906 screens.
Whoa.
Honestly, more than I was expecting.
Womp, womp. Good movie.
So my first question is, why Everything Everywhere?
All at Once.
What drew you to this movie?
I'll let the white person go first, Liam.
I was going to be nice and let the Asian person go first. I wanted to talk about this movie because Yutaka wanted to talk about this movie.
Friendship.
I do enjoy them.
I love the movie. It's a great movie. But obviously, I'm not Asian, so I'm not going to gravitate to be like, well, let's discuss this with... in line with my queerness. But obviously, Yutaka is Asian and queer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming...
Very Asian.
It's pretty... Yeah.
All right, well then, certainly the reason I wanted to talk about it is when this came out...
From the closet. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, girl, since like I was 15, but
thanks,
okay.
Thanks, Jordan.
Wait, way to make me feel old again. I took my dad to see it, to press screening, and... Mm. I love the fact that he's like, okay, this sounds silly, but all right. And we're sitting there watching it. And I mean, I'm just loving this story. And I want to cry. I mean, I really want to cry. And I look over and this man's got tears running down his face. I'm like, Shit, I gotta lock it up. Because, you know, Asians, we don't show emotion. So if he's going to sit there and have his moment, I can't. I was like, I got to be strong and pretend like I don't see that he's crying, any of this. Inside, I'm dying and crying because I think he's relating to Evelyn and I'm relating to Joy.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was such a, like, an amazing moment. And then when we, of course, leave the cinema, I was like, how'd you like it? It was okay. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
That's really good.
So,
oh, that's
I mean, if that isn't always the straight experience.
Well, I think that neither of us are Asian either. So here we are. What?
Big reveal.
Yeah, we're the Daniel S's of this podcast.
So can I say what my alt opening was going to be?
Sure.
Like, I know we don't really talk about like alt jokes or whatever, and this isn't really a joke, but, you know, Brooke and I have talked extensively about our experience at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
And when I talk about this movie being clearly made by two men who went to Emerson College, it is the most, like, two men who went to Emerson College movie to maybe ever exist.
Like, it's also, like, I would say the best version of that because, yes, like, easily
there's
end
a
up
bad,
with,
like, Tether version of this that is, yes, like, demonic and, like, has the most rancid of vibes. Yeah.
You could definitely end up with 500 Days of Summer from Emerson, oh, is God, all that I'm saying. Yeah.
a movie I like, but yeah.
Mom,
I do
sorry
hear,
to
I,
hear that.
I do
yeah,
hear you.
Me too.
Look, when
what's
I
wrong
am
with
a
500 Days of Summer,
nothing at all.
This is inter-country allyship we have to stand. But I was basically like watching. I think the first watch, I only seen this movie twice, so this is the second time I saw it. The first watch was just more like the experience of watching it. You get wrapped up in it. You're feeling everything. You know, blah blah blah. A year passes. You survive the discourse. Everything happens, and like revisiting it, knowing everything that happened. This watch. And now, like, obviously, like, having seen all the Daniel's work, it is, like, contextualizing it within the Emerson framework. It is hard to, like, not see the Emerson-ness within this movie, you know? But that's just, like, my point of view as someone who went there. I don't know about you, Brooke, if you were able to pick up on these sights and sounds.
I agree. I feel like, so, what separates Emerson from other film schools is the fact that there's, like, almost no funding. It's a very expensive school. And, like, yeah, there's Avid on the computers and stuff. But it's nowhere close to somewhere like USC
like
or
NYU,
NYU in terms of, like, support. So, Emerson, like, filmmakers are known for being very scrappy. And, like, this is, I think, like, the ultimate scrappy movie because it's so impressive how much they're able to pull off, not only with the budget that they had, but, like, all of the constraints.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The constraints of location, the constraints of characters, the constraints of, like, having to cast such specific actors because you need them to do so much. Simultaneously, the fact that this was edited on Final Cut Pro.
Slay mama.
Wait, what? Okay, that I actually did not know.
Wow.
My God.
Can you believe that?
Premiere. Not even a premiere.
Is it?
I don't know.
Not even a premiere.
I don't know. What do you use, Jordan?
I use Premiere.
I think it was edited in Premiere, which is slightly
also
better.
Slay.
But I vividly remember when this won the Oscar for.
Did they tweet the timeline of it?
Yeah, they tweeted the premiere timeline.
That's,
I remember,
so hot.
That was like,
yeah. More movies should do that.
I would.
Paul Rogers won the.
I forgot who they were nominated up against, but I think it's like his first. Yeah. Oh my God, the speeches that year from that movie, I loved.
Are you sure you loved all of them?
Ooh, we're not going to go down that discourse. That's fair. That's fair.
I think
you are correct.
No, I think
but her
we will.
Speech was nice, though. I'm sorry.
I think we will. Yeah, no, I'm basically delighted with everything that happened with this movie. This is, I will just say from my perspective, this is not going to be an episode where I'm like, you know, the thing about this movie, like, I was, if anything, more blown away watching it the second time now and sort of just like thinking of it as a piece, like separating it from when like I first saw it when it was first released in theaters, like the path that it could potentially have to Oscar stardom. And then like as we went more through the campaign, like the mounting, like, you know, just obsession with this movie, I was just trying to like watch it as a piece of like 2-hour cinema devoid of everything like other than like what was going on screen. And I was like, yeah, I it's amazing. I think this movie deserved everything that it got, except for the fact that Stephanie Hsu does not have an Oscar. That is all.
Agreed.
I'm going there to say.
Mm-hmm. There it is.
That's, yeah. That was rough. That should have been the one if there was that. I mean, because I'll still say Angela Bassett really, really should have won. But yeah. If
are you saying, she did the thing?
Yeah, she did do the thing. But if any supporting actress from this film should have got it, it should have been Stephanie. Like that was the most egregious yep. thing.
It's pretty egregious. Like, and yeah. By the way, I have no hate towards Jamie Lee Curtis. I actually don't dislike her performance the way that I think a lot of people turned on the performance through award season. I like it, but it's definitely like the hydrogen bomb versus coughing baby meme when you put it up against Stephanie Hsu's performance.
Yeah,
I just every movie in Oscar season needs a villain. I feel like people on the internet like want a villain, and for some reason this movie. Because this movie was just such a juggernaut that it you have this insidious nature where like if something is winning so much, people are like, well, obviously it has to be bad now. And then they turn on and they hate it, and so it has this like.
That's why you don't want to peak too early in Oscar season.
Yeah.
Oscar season is reality TV.
It is
like
that's the best. Yes.
I feel like it becomes more and more into like stark definition every year that like you have heroes and villains of award season. Everything is dependent on when you're peaking and what events you're being seen at. It is high society.
Yeah.
I remember it premiered at South by Southwest, which is back in February or March?
Yes.
March 2022.
And yeah, so
people were like, no way this is still going to be talked about when Oscar season rolls around. Like the fact it carried itself, because also, I mean, it had a historic box office run for A24. And I do think it had a lot of love. Oh, yeah. Maybe not the UK.
Was it like 10 theater release?
Did you guys get it?
No, it was. We did eventually get it. But by the time we got it, Hughes had already had it for months, and it was also out on digital for Hughes. So, most people in the UK watched it illegally because we all wanted to watch it. But I think by the time Hughes got it on digital, I think we still had like a 2 month wait.
Oh damn. My god!
For it coming out. So,
I'm
it
so
didn't
sorry.
Do that well, in the UK.
I'm impressed that being here in the Midwest, that I saw a lot of people like. I'll be honest, as soon as this started picking up steam and after I saw it, I was like, I hope it does good. I pray it does good. And I was impressed how many theaters here in the mid, were like actually accepting it. I was like, well, that's effed up. All right. I love it though. I love it because normally, you know, the Midwest, that's going to be somebody who's going to be like wanting to see what just came out and did great at the box office. The Chosen One, that crazy series, that's a TV series and it's doing what? Wow, smart. Okay. But I did not expect that of this movie to do so well. And I loved watching Oscar season because the critics got weird and some were hateful, which I love watching them make an ass of themselves. So it was a good time.
People were weird about this movie. And I think that we can say that I do think there was a lot of obviously very strong defenders of this movie who would not hear like a single wrong opinion or a single negative opinion. And I think it's totally valid if you didn't like this movie. But I think we can say that people were definitely weird about why they didn't like this movie.
Very.
Yeah.
Every movie has like a weird, like Maestro, I feel like this year is getting that like weird thing where people are like, purposefully dumping on Bradley, like specifically as a person, where you're like, separate like church and state,
life
like,
and art.
This like obsession you have is like borderline like creepy parasocial, like why are you so obsessed? Like people need to like realize that they're movies, but that's okay. And you know what we're here for? We're not here to talk about people being weird online. We're here to talk about this movie and the queerness within it, because I think this is what Drew, like, I'm excited that you guys brought this, because I think that this movie is fascinating in terms of, like, I'm just going to front load the queerness here, because I think it is like, I think inherently this movie's fascinating in terms of queerness, because there is, I think, like, many different angles at which we can kind of come at this, because I do think, like, net positive, this is a very pro-queer movie, obviously. Like,
oh, of course.
Daniel Kwan has, like, talked about, like, speaking to his queer friends who grew up with immigrant parents, and, like, that specific experience about, like, coming out, your parents rejecting you, or not, like, even accepting, like, you coming out, and you have to, like, repeatedly come out time and time again.
Yes.
I think, like, if you look at Jobu Tobaki / Joy, like, kind of this, like, queerness throughout, though, on the flip side of it, if you want to look at, like, not negative queerness, but I think, like, if you view through one lens, you could see, like, that queerness representing, like, the villain in this movie, and, like, queerness being chaotic to, like, disrupt a heterosexual, like, patriarchal family structure. And in the end, also, like, queerness is dismantling that, but it is, like, still building up what is a more, like, heterosexual, like, accepted family structure. And then you have everything to do with, like, the men and queerness in this movie, which I think is a whole third category, you know? But so that's why I'm excited to talk about this, though, because we have you two lovely people to discuss with in Brooke, but it's like, it is...
And me.
This movie is... you're always here. No, but this movie is just... It is... For being, like, such a big populist movie, for making so much money, it has, like, for a four-quadrant movie, this, like, core of queerness at the center that you cannot avoid, that is built into this movie. And when you have a movie like that, for us, I feel like it's so exciting, because there is so much that we can kind of attack, dissect, look at, how was this pushed forward, things like that. So that's why I'm excited, but...
I'm happy you mentioned the queerness part as a villain, because I completely agree. I see why that happened. And I see, I loved the, just knowing that if you think about it, when, you know, you're coming out and you're not accepted, I think you can become the villain. And that, like, and I loved that. Like,
and some of us are accepted and still become the villain.
That's, well, Liam, that's you. Yes, that's true.
The point is that you're doing it of your own accord. Self.
Yeah, exactly.
Self motivated villain era. We stand.
Always.
But yes, I agree. I think that it is pretty special and amazing on one level, that this, you can describe this film as a movie where accepting your queer children solves every problem in the universe, and also be like, well, that's a very simplistic way to look at how difficult this sort of thing actually is. Because after, you know, the climactic battle between Joy and Evelyn, that is the last that we see of Joy and sort of, like, her alter ego.
Mm.
You know, we don't see her again, except in, like, the real world.
Right.
Yeah. Because she is defeated. Acceptance defeats hate.
Internal hatred.
That was the word I was looking for. Internalized.
I mean, this movie does have this, I think, like, deep optimism and sincerity, though, which is very refreshing. Even if it is, like, simplistic, I do walk away from this movie and I'm like, kind of feels nice, just, like, ultimately, like, Waymond is just like, I love everyone, and, like, that's great. And I'm like, honestly, King, like,
and that's crucial.
You're the best.
I think it has to be sort of simplistic because, you know, it's so, you know, Jobu Tobaki is so nihilistic, and it's such a movie that could be as complicated in its resolution as it is in its plot buildup. And I think that, like, you lose what made this movie widely accessible if you keep it in sort of that, like, crazy mind headspace. You have to bring it back down to earth and be like, the answer is love.
Right.
But essentially, yes. That's which, to be fair, you don't get a lot of that in some Asian families. And that's why I really, like, the whole emotional dynamic and, it's so hard to explain, because I think I was thankful I kind of grew up differently. But that's because I had a white mother. No problem to that.
Not at all.
Yeah. Don't ask her to cook stir fry. Just don't. And, but it was really interesting, because I could certainly see from, like, my dad's perspective that, like, in a sense, he was almost also either Evelyn or Joy, with just how the parental figures in this just acted towards, you know, their kids. And I just, it's very interesting. I don't know. There's so much, like, I relate to this so much, and I think that's why it's just...
It's not just unpacking this idea of, like, the first generation children is where you really have the... No, it's whole... You're unpacking, like, generations and generations. That line that Evelyn says to her father where she's like, I will not do to my daughter what you did to me.
Hmm.
And that you don't even think of Gong Gong as part of the problem necessarily, because he's more of like an obstacle slash he's old, we want to take care of him, until you really get to see like those intense flashbacks and be like, oh, she has felt like she's not good enough her whole life because of her father, and you know, the cycle of generational
trauma.
Yeah.
And Jamie Lee Curtis is in this movie, so trauma is inevitable.
Trauma. What's the what? Trauma.
Trauma.
Trauma. I'll never
trauma get. Dies tonight is what I'll say.
I will never get that supercut out of my head. I will say I recently watched season 2 of The Bear, a great season of television involving a lot of generational trauma, including Jamie Lee Curtis, and I'm just going to pretend that her Oscar is for
that performance.
Who is she in The Bear?
We'll go with.
She plays, I feel like it's been exposed enough to people in the film community that it's not like a quote unquote spoiler, but she plays Jeremy Allen White's mother, along with like his two siblings, and she is clearly like has a lot of mental issues, undiagnosed bipolar, alcoholic, but like runs the family with an iron fist and is very much like oscillates wildly between like love bombing her kids and endlessly criticizing them.
In
an extremely stressful episode that I
one
both
of the best though that it's, that's winning awards that, it,
it's
that
incredible
episode is
yeah we well we the thing is that The Bear season 2 hasn't even hit the award circuit yet. I'm sure I can almost guarantee you that Jamie Lee Curtis is winning an Emmy for that episode, but like in my opinion that's a much more layered character than what she's doing in this movie, which again, I don't think that it's a bad performance, but I think it's like she's not the character is not really given very much depth.
No.
Well, I think it's interesting. It's like I think what you kind of said at the beginning is for sure what I picked up on the second viewing is like this is not a movie in which like you're going to get these deep necessarily like nuanced characters. Like it has to paint with a bigger brush, both like emotionally and thematically, because it is not thematically necessarily, but like when you have so much going on plot wise, like if you had these like minute character like developments or beats or like characters writ large, like it would be hard to actually track them across this multiverse. So like I think she does need to be bigger, which makes sense.
The most layered characters are Evelyn and Joy, like it, and I mean even Wayman, too, I love very much and I think is wonderful, is he has his shit figured out. And we don't focus on him because he is a constant and he will remain a constant. And he like kind of is a constant in every single universe.
Yeah. This time, the Wayman Evelyn stuff hit much harder for me than like any of the stuff with the kid, which was interesting. Like I found their relationship and like him giving her the papers and her like that whole beat there is fucking devastating,
right? And that he's really giving her the papers because he just wants to talk about it.
Literally,
he doesn't actually want to divorce her.
He's just like, "Girl, stop for a second.
We need to chat." I think it's because like the first time that probably all of us and people like us watched this movie, we were like, "Holy shit, this is about me as a gay kid, like relating to my parents." And then now the second time, we're like, "Okay, we got that out of the way." Or at least we know it's coming.
Well, let's look at everything else.
Now we can focus on things like the relationship. Yeah.
I hadn't picked up on as much with that until the second watch.
Mm.
Especially the universe, which is the Kung Fu movie star.
The movie star universe, yes.
The movie star where she is having the conversation out the back after she's left the theater. Like, first time watching that conversation didn't really hit. But second time, I was like, started like tear up because it didn't even register the first time, but the second time when he was like walking away, like I've already given you a chance, like how will you not do it again, break me heart again and stuff. Very simplified version of what was said, but
that's the final cut. You're breaking my heart and stuff.
And shit
happened. that like I was like, oh. It was just instant, like, my heart broke for him. And I just never picked up on that the first time around.
Yeah. I think, I picked up on that, but I also, I think I was very emotional just seeing that actor just acting again. Like, that was part of the push why I really wanted to see this, truly. I didn't know much about, I saw the trailer, like, it looks fun, but the story of him coming back. And so that scene, though, I saw it in theaters, I wanted to cry right then and there because it was a beautiful shot. He looked very handsome. And then when he was sitting there just explaining how, yes, she broke his heart, I was just like, oh my God, I wanted to cry. So today, I was bawling.
I mean, it does have something to say about, like, you know, relationships over time and how like in the moment, you know, as they go on, you do lose that sense of spark. And like, how do you recapture something that was like once there? And even if you've had so many like lovely experiences in your marriage, like eventually, like what happens like in this next chapter of your life? Like, how do you rediscover like what you're supposed to do, who you're supposed to be? And I do think that's like what I love about the ending is like the two of them kind of reconnecting and having that little moment right there at the end is very sweet, and being able to kind of like move forward in this next chapter of their lives. It's very tender, very sincere.
It's really kind of beautiful. Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there was I think like perfectly illustrates what it feels like to have this generational gap between you and your parents, though, not just in the text of the movie, but like the film itself. There is I think a couple of famous threads that I am going to choose not to invoke, but a lot of people showed this movie to their parents or people older than them when it was gaining all this traction, and their older generations were like, what is this? I don't like this. I don't understand it. I don't know what to think of this. And the Daniels have talked about how making this film was in large part, aside from like the very personal idea of like, you know, being from an Asian family or being queer, was about like how their parents have to talk about the fact that their sons made shit like Swiss Army Man.
Oh my God, yes.
The death of Dick Long.
Yeah.
Lest we forget the death of Dick Long.
I haven't seen it. You didn't like it, did you? No. It's okay. You can say that you didn't like a movie that the Daniels made.
Oh no, it's a fascinating movie. I will say that, but it is not a movie I liked.
Like Swiss Army Man, I really enjoy that soundtrack.
I haven't seen it.
Incredible. I'd be interested what you think, because I feel like this was my big takeaway on this movie again. And we'll get into it I want to save it for more of the masculinity, but they have such an interesting relationship with masculinity and men, and like putting men in situations that are precarious, perhaps a little zany, a little silly, and like looking at masculinity through that lens, but at the same time like framing it within this loving manner. Like Swiss Army Man is like so vulgar, but at the same time it has this like sheen of beauty, and like it's wrapped up in this like very like emotional way. And this movie even kind of has that as well, where it's like very vulgar at times, but it is still like beautiful and nice. And like that's kind of like all of their films, where it's like kind of the grotesque mist with this like optimism and sincerity, which is like a very strange mixture. But this movie does it a lot. Like so many of the jokes in this movie are like the closet where you walk in and it's all like the BDSM stuff, but they're having like a conversation that's like so sincere and important, but it's like contrasted with this, like that is their filmography. Like Turn Down for What is kind of like that, you know what I mean? It's like everything they've done has this like vulgarity with this beauty. So
And I think that like they have always, you know, from their shorts, have always had this sort of like in your face, slightly scatological, slightly like disrespectful. I say that in a complimentary way.
No, totally.
Humor style. And I think it's meant to turn some people off intentionally, which makes me interested to see Swiss Army Man, because I feel like it's like 20% more like juvenile than this movie.
For sure. Yeah.
And I don't know how I would feel, because that is sometimes like a big turnoff for me.
Yes.
I watched Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery last night for the first time ever.
Oh my God.
What?
Da 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 da.
Yeah. Because I was like, I'm old enough now that I feel
groovy,
like
baby.
I will be able to appreciate it if it's funny.
What did you think?
I'd give it like a solid 3 out of 5.
No!
I know.
Wait, that's really good. A solid 3 out of 5.
Yeah, that is actually
really
pretty good.
Score.
Yeah, that is
I
good.
Mean, it was undeniably funny. But
there are some
like,
great jokes in there.
I was still, even though like I don't consider myself like a pearl clutching kind of person, was a little bit like, this is like a pee gag, is not doing anything for me. It just
what worked it. What worked for you? Who were your guys in that movie? What were your bits?
Who were my guys? I think
were
I
you
liked
like
Dr.
Scotty?
I think the Dr. Evil stuff probably worked the best for me, as
course,
opposed
yeah.
to like the Austin Vanessa business. Sure. And I like sort of all the meta stuff, like Basil Exposition.
Basil Exposition rocks.
Yeah. And he's obviously like, Mike Myers is undeniably very funny in those movies.
Oh yeah.
But to be fair though, The Spy Who Shagged Me is the better of
Is it
the three.
Is it?
Oh,
but
I don't know.
I would
I
say
love
it
Gold
is.
Member more, because it's more like I know, but it's
that
so damn
is
catchy.
A take.
That's a hot take, guys. I love Gold Member the most, maybe
what a take.
Just because he's
fun.
Got the Midas
cool.
touch.
Oh, but touch it too much. Gold Member.
Well, that's when, at that point, you have Mike Myers playing, what, like 5 different characters?
Yes,
yeah.
Too many.
Yeah. Anyway, I make the Austin Powers comparison because I feel like that's one of those like, oh, come on, but like, you got to get over, you know,
it sure, yeah.
being a little gross out humor or whatever, because it's one of the like funniest movies ever made. And
see,
I was
so
like, yeah, I am old enough.
Don't take this
enough.
In the wrong way.
Okay.
That is a very American way to look at it.
Perhaps
you haven't seen you haven't met the fat bastard yet either, and that
yeah.
is subtle nuanced quiet humor.
Oh,
not
very,
at all
yeah
broad.
Very quiet yeah.
Perhaps that might be the final nail in the coffin for me.
I can't oh
I always find it like for me in the UK we don't see things like that as like dirty or filthy or anything like that. We just think it's silly. So it's always amusing listening to Americans be like, it's always on like the
period,
the raunchy side of it. And you're like, is it? Well,
that's interesting.
The differences in culture, I think, is quite amusing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like truly like a cultural difference. Yeah. So like, which leads me to the question, what do you think of something like Swiss Army Man?
I never watched it.
Oh,
that's yeah.
Oh, well,
you
can watch
you know
it and report
what?
Back,
Liam. I'm gonna have to make you watch that. I need to know your thoughts on that. It was an it just wasn't for me, but I still watched it. But it was just so outlandish, and I don't think I was prepared like that. That you know, that was my introduction to the Daniels, and I was just like, who are these folks?
Mm.
And then, I mean, obviously, then we come to this. I'm just like. Oh, I get it. Like, I mean, I love the vulgarity, which I always thought was like really kind of just when people, I would hear some people like with the butt plug. I mean, I was laughing my ass off. I thought that was great. That's hilarious.
I also love the butt plugs. I have to say,
and then that they sold those at
think
candles.
It's really funny.
Please. Like that's smart.
I
but
think it's really funny.
And I've
Jordan,
heard like,
yeah.
There were some people, you will never see this win an Academy Award. He's like, it's got dildos and butt plugs. They're not going to award that. And I was like, this, okay. I was like, that's what you took away from this? That's your takeaway? I'm like, shut the hell up.
I think that's sort of like, I agree that is a very like dismissive way to look at it. But the question becomes like, do we think that doing things like having guys stick in butt plugs and have these dildos swinging around and like have, you know, a sub and a dominatrix. Like, do we think that is just played for laughs? Do we think that it's simply shock value? Or do we think like the specific choice is saying something? Jordan, I was watching your face I feel like
ooh,
you have.
I want to know about that because
go deep because this is what I go deep. This is what I go to you for.
Well, I guess yeah. So I mean, like, I think this is what's fascinating about this movie is that like the lesbian portrayal feels very. No, I don't know, like, if nuance is the right way, but it's, like, done with such heart, and it's, like, that central relationship that, like, everything about that, like, even if, like, necessarily, like, Joy's queer love is not, like, the most deep or nuanced thing, it is still...
They're both girls and they love each other.
Exactly. It's the front and center, whereas, like, I feel like what bumped for me with the butt plug specifically is it feels, like, zany for zany's sake and at the cost of, like... making fun of like gay men, and even if it's not like intentionally going out to make fun of gay men, I feel like it's just a joke that felt so left of center within the confines of the other broad humor that was happening. And I don't, and it's like basically like my takeaway when watching it the second time was like everything that like you have to do something like crazy to like I guess like enter your other
yes.
universal self, and for that to be just sticking like a dildo up your ass, it just like didn't feel like a joke that necessarily hit for me. So like when those moments did happen and it's such a front and center thing, it just felt a little like, do we like necessarily need this? Whereas like the Dom sub thing I think is like I didn't like bump or anything with it, but like specifically like when like the only stuff about queer like gay masculinity is like done in the form of like just a butt plug, it just felt a little reductive to me. But that was kind
that's
of like
fair,
my experience. I don't know, it just feels like very like isn't this
low,
crazy
low that... hanging fruit
exactly.
I didn't take that like that, but also I mean
but,
yes,
yeah,
I
please feel free
value.
To disagree. Yeah,
I know. Oh, yeah, no, I kind of do, but I well okay, I took it as shock value. And because the other dude had a trophy up his ass. And what I loved, the reason why I enjoyed it and thought it was hilarious is because here these two dudes are with these things sticking out of their ass and doing all these martial arts. It was just so, I don't know. To me, I was like, it's just teaching men, don't be afraid to put things up your ass.
Don't be afraid to put it up your butt if it makes you a better fighter. Just saying. Mm-hmm. I think that it's definitely worth looking into. I think it would be more egregious if they weren't doing ridiculous stuff left and right. Like, it's one
for sure, yeah.
in a series of bizarre things.
I think it's just because it's like so fronted, whereas like you'll see in the background people doing like licking a pole or like dribbling on
humping a cushion,
right? Like it, like that stuff is always like background, but like when the one joke that is foregrounded is about
I
like
see what you mean
interrogate okay. or not like interrogating masculinity, but like looking at like these heterosexual men being like, what's
the
craziest
thing
I can do is stick something up my butt, you know? It just feels like okay, like
I don't know, the one dude looked very eager and ready.
He's
I'm just
ready
saying. He was
that's
like
true.
I'll do it, like, and that whole scene of him trying to and the I
yeah
again to me that scene I was like that is great, and even my dad's reaction, he was having a good
the
time
fact
that
your dad made it that my parents started watching this and they were like we can't
oh they turned it.
It
off
yeah
well I mean we were at also this was the other. We saw it in IMAX. Which
whoa, oh my God.
The sound, the oh
it's
my
a
God.
Very
the
big
sound.
Butt plug.
Yeah. So it, like, we couldn't leave. And I mean, but he really, I mean, he liked to play it off, but he's like, that was actually funny and clever. But he's also like, I didn't get it, but I laughed and I had a good time. I was like, well, okay. You weren't disgusted by it? He's like, I was like, and I should say, like, my parents, they're free thinkers. Like, I didn't have, I'm very thankful, like, I didn't have, like, Joy's personally her experience and say. I think mine was more about just the fear of coming out to them.
Of course, yeah.
They're just, it's really funny. Like, we could be in the store when I was growing up, and somebody asked my mom the weather, and she'd be like, oh, my son's gay. I go, what? She asked about the weather. What the? So they're those type of parents.
Your mother was Catherine Tate.
She's really sweet.
Yes.
Have you met our John? He's a gay man now.
Yes.
Oh my God. Shout out Catherine Tate. A national treasure.
Very much so. I took it in the opposite direction to all of you, though. Well, not opposite direction, but like another one. So I seen it as, because everything else is quite simplified in how they're putting the message across. I just thought it was like a, it's not a big deal. Look, he's got a thing up his ass.
Yeah. I love that.
It's normal. It's fine. But clearly I just, I'm either a simpleton or just didn't think about it.
I'm
most inclined to agree with you, Liam, in that like it's one of a bunch of things that you do. And I think like the what is odd enough about it to let you tap into another like universe is also the context. First of all, neither of them are actually butt plugs. One is a one is an IRS trophy. The other is like God knows what. An actual
I mean, that
trophy.
IRS trophy was like a butt plug painted gold.
But like the idea that it's not you know, it's designed for something else, and also it's in like a professional setting.
Yeah,
that's the joke of it. Yes, but to be clear, Jordan, I do think like your opinion is super valid, and I feel like I remember us talking about this when we first saw the movie, and we were like, "Yeah," but I also think that like it would be it's very different coming from the Daniels than it is coming from, you know,
Michael Bay,
a filmmaker.
That's
that,
the thing.
Yes,
I don't think we have Swiss Army Man on our list because I think it might have been too small. But like, there's so much homoerotic subtext within that movie between Radcliffe and Dano, and I think it's done in a, like, as I kind of said earlier, like they have this interest in like men pumping themselves up and like doing crazy stuff to their bodies, or like their bodies doing crazy things, and like that movie is dealing with like, I think they use his dick as like some sort of like, you know, every body part in that movie is being used in a way that a body part shouldn't be used, but like that type of masculinity together is then read in like a homoerotic subtext. But it felt, I just liked it. I think it just like played better for me, and I don't think it's like anything that they're doing is necessarily like bad. I actually think it's like quite nice, and I think it's interesting to look at how so many of their men, except for like Waymond, are like hyped on all their like own juice and supply. But yeah, so I guess that's like the only reason why I bumped. But like, I do think like net positive though, and I don't think it was ever like a net, like intentionally bad or anything like that. I think it was much more done in a way of like, here's a joke, let's go for another joke, you know, because like that is the majority of the movie. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Daniel Chinard gay? Making that up?
He was. No, I didn't think either of them were.
Okay, never mind.
I think they're
both
straight, yeah.
Okay.
I think they're both allies. They're both allies.
Ally,
ally of the year.
Are they fierce, strong Brock allies?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I will say, what got the biggest response, though, of all those different jump points still in the theater, or just even for me, though, like, I saw that stuff, I'm like, oh, okay. It's still, I remember everybody in the audience at the paper cut scene.
I'm thinking about it right now.
So that's why I had to turn away. So it's interesting to me. It was like that really got more of a response than this. So, but
absolutely, yeah. In terms of, I feel like when I watched it this time, I thought it, and I don't know whether this was intentional or not, and viewing it through like a trans lens, but I do think it's interesting that like Evelyn, because I guess it is like Joy is what she calls her daughter, like that's her daughter's name, but like anytime they're talking about Jobu Tabaki, she always just says Joy, so it's like
my
she's
joy.
Like dead naming Jobu Tabaki, even though she's not necessarily dead naming, but I'm like, there is a world in which you can read her like dead naming like this queer villain. And I don't think that was at all intentional, but like the fact that it kept happening where she would like, it would say Jobu Tabaki, she'd be like, that's my joy. And it's like, no, I am literally like a different universe, like daughter of yours. Like, please stop calling me that. It was kind of interesting.
Well, but I thought it was still the one main joy that was that just fractured.
Yeah, so basically, like, what happens is that Alpha Joy becomes Jobu Tabaki because Alpha Evelyn pushes her too far to, like, continue jumping between universes. So it's essentially, like, a reverse of Evelyn in the main universe, where like she's not really invested in what Joy is doing because she doesn't agree with it. The idea is that like she messed up her daughter in an entirely different way, in a different
slayful way.
Yeah, but like in a way where she both pushed her daughter away and pushed her too far, the way that her father like pushed her away in this universe. So she reflected it. You don't really know what's up with Alpha Gong Gong other than him being like a stone cold badass who's ready to murder at a second's notice.
He's like, drop her ass.
Rolling the fuck, like stay strapped.
Right.
Or get clapped. But the idea, I think, being that, like, in the Alpha universe, he pushed Evelyn too far, and that it's this, like, insane domino effect. I mean, I love what this movie says about domino effects, too, is that, like, the power of love and acceptance can, like, ripple through all of the multiverse, the way that hate and nihilism can also ripple through, like, the entire multiverse. The only reason that, like, our Evelyn is in this situation is because of what Alpha Evelyn did. It's really not her fault, but
she has to choose to step up.
It's kind of like a wonderful parallel to what happened IRL with like this amazing groundswell of support for this movie, but also like support for Asian led like American mainstream cinema in general, where it's like you had a writer on Twitter, William Yu, who started the hashtag starring John Cho project with remember that, which was like, can we make hot Asian men the leads of romantic movies again, which inspired John M. Chu to go after Crazy Rich Asians, which inspired Ki Huy Quan to come back to acting.
It is such a cool thing
it's
to see.
All
isn't that amazing?
Bagel. It's literally a bagel. Wow.
And everything bagel. Yeah.
That's crazy sauce.
I can't. This is where I was like, I'm such a bad film student that I had to learn this from the fucking IMDb trivia. But the googly eye being the sort of like interdimensional sign of love, because it's Waymond trying to like show his love for his wife, being juxtaposed with the everything bagel, which is like the inverse of the googly eye, which is like the symbol of nihilism. I was like, 4 years in film school fucking wasted, because I literally don't see metaphors anymore. I have
There's
to go to
so
IMDb
many circles
like a
in the plebeian movie.
Yeah. It was an embarrassing moment for me. I was like, I can't believe I never picked up on that.
I
love it.
The whole movie is like I'm talking about like cycles and circles, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and everything bagel is a circle. It's talking about like the cycles of abuse and like family trauma. So I think if you just like macro step out from a bagel, you're like, oh, this movie, I mean, like, it is about a bagel, but you're like, the movie's also about like the bagels that we put ourselves in, you know, or the bagels that are put upon us.
Yes. I put everything on a bagel, all my hopes and dreams, all my disappointments.
I did actually eat a bagel while watching it again today.
Stop it. Oh my God.
That's a good way to eat it. Yeah.
Everything bagel has to be the best.
Oh, it was just a
sesame
seed one.
Okay.
I had Starburst, so I'm not even going to pretend.
What did I have? I had some M&Ms, which were a circle.
Yay.
There we go.
Your mind.
My mind.
I still love, like, I enjoy that we're talking about the whole, just the circle of abuse and love and acceptance, but I also still like the what ifs, like what if I did this, what would happen in my life, and just to see,
of course,
like, there's still that scene that really sits out for me, is where Evelyn, she's like, well, what if I want to go back, because she's like, I love this life, and I was like, oh my God, like that
relatable queen,
the absolute dagger of her being like, I have to go back, I saw my life without you, it was so great.
I would have killed myself if I was her husband.
Over we should talk about some performances ASAP before we do, and I want to talk about the other universes. Have either of you seen any of the Daniels shorts? Jordan, I know you have.
I have not, so I need to.
So the short of the week, .com, a great website, curated a bunch of their shorts like for this project. Jordan says it's not that great of a website, but they are platforming shorts, which is more
than
we can say for 99% of film
websites. We have to stand.
You just kind of have to have some money to have your short platformed on Short of the Week, or have a star in it. But you didn't hear that.
That sucks, because so much goes into making a short. It's really, like, that's how you kind of get to have people see what you're capable of, and that's just getting. Oh man, I love
Short of the Week. Yeah. Short of the Week is like the Blacklist of
Which,
short
congrats,
films.
By the way,
oh,
sorry,
thanks.
I was gonna didn't want to bring that up during this.
I
but,
swear
oh my God.
To God, I didn't bring it up just so that.
No. I saw that, and I meant to.
You're like
I meant to say something on our X. I just, oh my God, that's awesome. Like, as soon as I saw that, because Cass had, like, said something, I'm like, oh my, like, that's a big deal. I'm just
that's so
that's
sweet.
Awesome.
Thank you. I'm now a Blacklist recommended writer. But it, like, not to be like, it means nothing, because it does. But it's definitely, like, it's very similar to Short of the Week, where it's, like, it's dependent on who votes on your shit. And mm-hmm. for Short of the Week, especially, like, who's in your shit. I think a lot of like blacklist.com is what kinds of stories you're writing, not necessarily how good your writing is. I mean, that's a part
but you're
of
a good
it,
writer.
But, like, oh, thank you.
I mean,
some projects can be both.
or I think there's a, I think on Wikipedia it shows you how many of those were produced, and there are some that I saw were produced.
There's some
like,
stinkers.
Oh, bad.
Seriously. Films. Yeah. It's because sometimes a script is just meant to be like a flashy sample and like does actually
meant
not
to
translate
be read.
Well.
Yes.
To, it's meant to be read and not necessarily to be filmed. Yeah.
And
we'll
stop
odd.
Hating
anyway.
On passengers, please. I actually enjoyed it.
You put into words what everyone was thinking.
An infamous Blacklist script deal. Did you know that apparently the original script is like totally different? Though?
Where were we go? What were you saying though before?
My
point you had a good
point. Yeah. My point was that there's a curated like list of the Daniel shorts on shortoftheweek.com, and I really highly recommend checking them out because I think that like they truly are such singular filmmakers, and yeah. that you can see them shooting in an alleyway in probably the middle of Boston with no lights and a camcorder, and you're like,
no hopes and no dream.
I get it. Yeah. Like you see the vision. There, yeah. they have a short called Pockets that I love.
That's a good one. Yeah,
yeah it's yeah, basically like
make a note about that because I'm gonna. I really will have to watch this because.
Yeah.
When I see the making of Everything Everywhere, I just want to see how else they make. What else they produce because so much goes into it for like
yeah and you're looking at like vision versus budget versus like visibility. That's the thing is that it's like I truly think that they are so deserving of the incredible awards run that they had because you can see that they're very genuine artists who mm-hmm. this is the kind of shit that they really like to make. It's pretty incredible that they got to make it on such yeah. a like wide like a mainstream scale and but you can see back from like when they were in college that this is like the stuff that they wanted to make and you see their influences so clearly and that they got to win for like an independent movie with like you know
that.
Incredible Asian representation both in front of and behind the camera like including the producers. It's not like
I know that's what makes
it's not
so
an all-white crew
this.
Which
oh
is
goodness.
Pretty great.
This is what makes me so happy about this. Look, I will say the Oscars are shit in my opinion, but I still love to watch them because it is pretty much all old white men. And we don't get to see a lot of people of color represented up on that stage sometimes, let alone be nominated. And just getting to see that them on the stage and just everything that they talked about, it was the most, oh my God, awe-inspiring thing.
Mm. Yeah. The Oscars developing a conscience in the last 5 to 10 years, I think is one of the best things that could have happened because you still yeah. have some huge misses.
Oh, yeah.
But you just also have many. Some huge, just not as many. And you also have some thing. Huge hits. And you really do have people like stop voters stopping and being like, okay, what are the implications if I don't vote for this person? Which
right.
I think is pretty key because as we know, people of color are never going to catch up to like being nominated for shitty performances. It's never going to fucking happen. Like,
no.
It's never going to happen.
Sorry, I love you, Meryl Streep. You could fart on screen and you're going to get a nomination.
Yeah.
What movie is that for, though? That sounds kind of like a good performance. I'd like to see
Florence.
Into the Woods. Nope.
Lest we forget Florence Foster Jenkins.
She could sing so good, though. She had a dream.
She had one dream. Just the one.
Her husband was like, and I will support you, my queen.
Anyway, but like, I think it's worth it if an Oscar voter is looking at their ballot and is like, I feel a little guilty if I don't vote for this person of color. Good. Mm. you should, because guess what? The fact that they're even on the long list means that, like, it's a good performance. And it's, like, again, there's still, like, a significantly higher bar to clear.
Mm-hmm.
And having people be aware of that in the Oscars, which is already, of course, completely arbitrary, is, yeah, I think, like, where it should be.
Mm.
You know? Yeah. That's something where, like, oh, wow, look at us. We're so great. We gave this person an award. Yeah, that's, like, the whole institution. Like,
pretty much,
forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a good place to lean, like, into it.
What you were talking about, though, for the Daniels and, like, their influences and stuff, I think that's what's so successful about the movie is the movie is really, like, The Matrix meets It's a Wonderful Life and done in, like, a very, like, kooky way. But, like, I feel is so refreshing to see it that now. I will say, though, I think revisiting this movie now after the, like, influx of multiverse stuff that we've had does give it this, like, end period. Like, we can close, like, the chapter on the multiverse,
like,
book.
Like, we're done. You're not going to do it better.
Exactly. This movie kind of did it, and I'm like, I don't kind of want to see anything else again for a while. You know, it just kind of, like, does everything you need it to do, and I think, like, that is what was so refreshing about it, especially for people. Even if, like, necessarily you didn't like the movie, it was kind of doing something that you'd maybe only read. There aren't, like, a lot of movies that did kind of this kind of multiverse thing at the time. And now it's like, you get a multiverse, you get a multiverse, you get a multiverse.
I mean, you see, they gave interviews where they're like, we were watching Spider-Verse and we were watching Rick and Morty and we were like, oh, fuck, everyone is going to be so sick of multiverses by the time this movie comes out.
Little did they know.
I think a crucial detail that they include is, like, where the multiverse splits, as opposed to, like, there's another universe. They say why, like, when this happened. The Hot Dog Fingers universe is, like, the most hilarious example of that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, in,
at,
you,
like,
know,
humanity,
like, human evolution. But, like, movie star Evelyn universe is, like, she stayed instead of leaving home.
Right.
That's what happens.
Like, in Hot Dog universe, so if you're biting your finger, is ketchup and mustard in there, or are they applying ketchup and mustard to their fingers?
I don't think they're eating their fingers, are they?
Did they?
They're sucking on them.
And I had this question as well, because when you're watching that, the, like, re-thingy of the movie with the hot dog fingers, it looks like the ketchup and mustard is coming out of their fingers.
That's what I thought, yeah.
I feel that's a movie in universe thing, because it doesn't happen later.
Mm.
Yeah,
is it like
Evelyn and Deirdre?
Like, are they, like, finishing with, like, ketchup fingers?
Maybe
is that what happens.
I don't know.
Oh my god, you come ketchup.
Yeah. Maybe it's like that universe's version of, like, you know, hearts and, like, butterflies is like ketchup and mustard, because you only see it in the Bollywood movie, which is, like, a heightened.
Right, of course, right. Yeah. See, there we go. Brooke, guess what?
What?
In every multiverse, there's Super Yaki. The consistency throughout space and time is always Super Yaki. It's incredible. Mm-hmm.
I know.
How do they do it?
Talk about a movie with some fits.
That's
Joy looks
true.
Pretty damn good, but she would look even better in some Super Yaki merch.
I feel like
it fits with the vibe, you know? We're both in Super Yaki merch. I know this is an audio medium. And it's because we love movies, the good ones and the bad ones that everyone has told us not to like. And the team at Super Yaki also loves movies. If you're looking for merch that is an ode to movies and filmmakers that you love, prepared by an incredible team with a huge variety of designs that frequently works with independent artists from all across the country, Super Yaki is the place for you. It's not just for the cinema lover in your life. It is for anyone that is interested in high quality material with cool, fun designs. I mean, there's literally everything you could think of, from books and pencils and notebooks and stickers to apparel like socks and hats and tees. They're super size inclusive. They're very eco-friendly and they're mailing and shipping. And we love them.
Oh, they're so cozy. You can wear them out.
What else is there to say?
You can wear them in the home. You can wear them while you're eating a bagel.
While you're eating an everything bagel. They've got a recent rom-com collection. They're always switching out new stuff and announcing cool little mini collabs. They're simply the best. I would find them in every universe.
That's so true.
Not to do laundry and taxes, but just to to chat slay. With and wear merch of.
Right.
So if this sounds like something that would be right for you, guess what? We have a little extra incentive, a little extra boost for you. Whoa, and you don't even have to like eat a whole chapstick or anything to take advantage of it.
That's kind
of
nice.
If you are a listener of the show, you can use code SUPERQQ for 10% off your Yaki order anytime, any order. Do it. So if the spirit moves you in this universe or any of the others, you can find them everywhere at superyaki.com. That's SUPERYAKI.com. Let's watch more movies and explore more universes.
Brooke, on, because you had mentioned earlier you want to talk about like the different multiverses and everything like that. So we can, if you do want to go into that, because I think like that's kind of interesting in regards to like the Jobu Tupaki of it all as well, like kind of the outfits that she's absolutely slaying.
I love
the costume department win anything, because my god, I don't even think they were nominated. Actually,
I believe they okay, so Shirley Carrera was nominated for best costume design at the Oscars. She did not win.
Who won? I literally forget. It was the last year.
I will tell you,
it was probably Black Panther.
Oh yeah.
And that would also be deserving, because those costumes were.
I think it was Black Panther. Yeah, that feels right.
Hang on.
But
I
like,
will tell you.
Joy and Jobu Tupaki's looks, like when she's like Elvis, the makeup that she has going.
Oh, the Elvis look was one of my favorite looks.
Her pink tennis outfit, I am a huge fan of.
Like the polo?
Yeah.
I love the yellow one with the squiggly.
Yellow one's good. With her hair, like, spells something out almost.
It apparently spells Jobu in, like, script.
That's fucking cool. Yeah. That's a slay mama.
Yeah. And I love when she's, I feel like underrated look is when she's chasing down the van in the Alpha universe, and she's in, like, the green
with the fluff.
Feathered, like,
oh, yes.
Thing. The ostrich feather. I know my feathers.
Yes, ostrich chic.
That wasn't
I've
a
seen
cheap
one ostrich
chicken feather.
In my time. Yeah, do we have favorite universes for people? I think specifically mine is probably the Raccoony, because Randy Newman voices the raccoon and he sings a little song, and I'm like, that is the shit. That is great.
Yes. So we have Raccoony universe, where Evelyn is a hibachi grill chef.
Yes.
What I think it's so hard to pick a favorite moment of this movie, because so much is happening at any given time. But I think my favorite is when she's really discovering how to use her powers. Mm. And she goes from like kung fu to hibachi to the pizza sign swirling.
Oh,
it's when it's
the choreography for that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's that I think is my favorite use of like a multiverse and multiverse jumping, is to be able to steal skills. There's a great show by the Wachowskis called Sense8 where they do this all the time, and you can like tap into someone else's body and use their martial arts. Oh my god, it's so good. I love it. I live for it. I think it's so much fun.
Well,
and
I won't say my true comments on the series, but
oh, do you not like it? It's okay. It's a weird series. I'm well aware.
Is there something inherently queer about being able to like tap into someone else's body?
Well, in Sense8, they're all pansexual.
Yeah,
because
they are.
All of their sexualities essentially, like, I don't want to say blend together, because that sounds like very derivative. It's not like that. It's just that, like, basically the idea that like everyone has pansexuality inside them.
That's a slay.
I mean, I think that Everything Everywhere has an element of that, because of the hot dog universe, Evelyn and Deirdre are in a romantic relationship. So you can say that Evelyn is a bisexual character if you want, because it depends on like, this is kind of an interesting like thought experiment. How intrinsic is sexuality to you as like a person? There's a version of you in every universe. Are you gay in every universe? Or are you like, are you different variations of queer in every universe? You know?
I think that is what's what I love about Joy, is that throughout this, like in every universe, like she is queer. So it's like there's no like questioning of like Joy's queerness.
Yeah, she's like, oh, in this universe, you're still hung up on the fact that I like girls, like referring to herself as Jobu Tupaki, like as like the all
as
the
like
omnipresent.
The alpha one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like kind of nice to see that. But like, you know, maybe in another universe, you're a straight podcaster, and what a nightmare that would be.
Oh. Do you think I'm like the token woman on a podcast about like financials? And
not about financials.
And I talk about how to like improve, I talk about like how to improve like your financial status, but yeah. Every three episodes I'm like, and by the way, women that wear makeup I think are actually whores. Like every now and then I just get really sexist
a little misogynist comment. Yeah. A little dash here and there.
No, you're one in an alternate multiverse, you are that you're one of them women who made the YouTube video just dragging drag queens. Saying yes. It's against God.
It's getting scary. It's getting scary out here.
I don't love that.
But no, I think that I really do think that like the hot dog universe, as ridiculous as it is, and is clearly just like played for like, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's played for laughs. But at the same time, there are like parody posters for all the different universes, and the hot dog universe is like in the style of like a French film, like a la Blue is the Warmest Color, but with less like sexiness.
Oh, I'm gonna have to look those up.
They're like a 30-minute sex scene.
But it's basically the poster is like, this is a romance film. This is like a foreign romance film.
Oh, that's fun.
Between two women.
What's the Rock universe?
Did they make one? It's just some fucking rock.
I mean,
we talk about how that
great
scene was also so damn emotional.
Yeah.
Like, I cried at that one, too, just because, like, and I should have been laughing, but oh my God.
No, you should be crying. You're right.
I was just bawling.
Just be a rock. I think it's kind of like Words to Live By, low-key.
I love when it's just, ha, 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 ha.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
Good stuff.
I think it is so meaningful that, like, there's an aspect of Evelyn as a queer character, or like that the audience can certainly interpret her as like having the ability for like a meaningful queer relationship somewhere out there in the multiverse.
And I could easily see that, because were her dad not the way he was, maybe she could have discovered herself.
And of course movie star universe slash, which is also the Kung Fu universe,
which is also like the In the Mood for Love universe.
Yeah, it's the Wong Kar Wai.
That's why that is my favorite. Yeah. That's my favorite universe, just because of that.
I really do love when movies make the effort to imbue differences in every element of the filmmaking, where it's like you're changing the aspect ratios, you're changing the color grading and the way that you're editing and the shot style and the lenses. Like, that's fucking filmmaking right there.
Yeah, no, that's really nice.
This is a budget of, well, according to the-numbers.com, it was a budget of a hot $25 million.
Couldn't believe that.
Which is like nothing. The VFX department was like 8 people, including both of the directors.
I mean,
it's insane.
That's so cool.
Wild.
They were out here editing on Premiere. It's nuts. I cannot even imagine what it is like editing this movie on Premiere, which crashes when you try to fucking edit a podcast, Jordan.
Yeah, like my PC. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have PTSD from this. But no, that's what I love. Like, you don't have to have this super massive budget to make something so visually appealing. Like, just, I loved, like, the scene of obviously the first time Evelyn goes through all the universes. Like, that is
being
stunning.
Told.
And just when they break it down, I'm like, really? Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so apparently they shot sort of like her in a million different universes over the course of a year, which makes you think that at the end of shooting every day, they're like, okay, Michelle, come into the green screen studio.
Yeah.
Here's like a new hat to put on, and we're going to do our screaming for the day.
It is fun when the scene, where, I don't think it's the one where she's getting pulled through, but the scene where she's just, where it just goes on, it's just Evelyn's face, and it is just shot after shot after shot after
behind
shot.
Her. Yeah,
of just universe, and I'm just like, it's so beautiful. It's so clever, everything that they come up with as well. Because they did come up with, that many shots, they clearly came up with like hundreds of ideas for different.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mind
because
blown.
Everything requires like thought put into the background, put into the expression, put into the costuming and hair and makeup. Like, you're not just picking, I mean, maybe they were picking stuff randomly out of a hat. No. But even then, that requires putting all the shit in the hat in the first place.
Because it all came together.
Yeah, exactly.
And I liked the pinky verse. I loved
pinky
verse. Just having that one pinky with the giant muscle. Just so silly and so simple. But it just really brought me a little bit of joy. Because I was just, every time I say it, I'm just kidding. Just one really small
It brought you a little
pinky.
Bit of joy. What I loved this time watching it with Joy is like Joy is just this depressed, nihilistic character and is so, it's like really like so much of like her, I don't want to say like queer suicide, but it does feel like she is at least like at the end very much like thinking about like killing herself. And
that's why she wants to go into the Everything Bagel.
Right. It's literally like, I can't deal with this anymore. And like the movie kind of like fronting that, especially like when you're like a teenager or at least like early 20 something, like I feel like that is inherently relatable that I was watching this play. I was like, oh my, especially like if you're having a hard time with your family accepting your queerness, there is something where you're like, if even at home I can't find this. And like, even though I have a found family, like with my girlfriend, like it's still not fulfilling me in a way, like I just can't take it anymore, and you're like, I'm gonna build a bagel.
I agree with you that that's where it felt like it was heading.
That her parents still want her in their life, but so it's like she can't fully, because she's trying to really cut ties and be like, I'm gonna be, if you're not gonna accept me, I have to be done. But I also think that like there's something very, I think, contemporary and relatable about how overwhelming Jobu Topaki, like how overwhelmed she feels by the fact that she can experience everything everywhere all at once. And I think that, you know, the Daniels grew up in the era of internet filmmaking and, you know, I think are very familiar with this idea of everything constantly like yelling at you. And feeling like you don't have a reprieve, you don't have time to just be a rock the way that older generations did. And that Evelyn in this universe feels like that too. I'm too busy. I don't have time. There's a million things that I have to do. That opening scene is so wonderfully chaotic and choreographed at the same time. But that Jobu Topaki is like, you don't understand. I never get a break. This is, I cannot turn off any aspect of my brain. And now neither can you. And there's no way that either of us are going to be able to deal with it. But they do. You know?
Yeah.
Somehow, they're able to compartmentalize it through the power of love and acceptance.
Yeah.
You find a way. Yeah. You ground yourself to the people that matter.
Yeah. No, that opening scene, in terms of, like, relatability, my father is very much like that, where it's, like, the nonstop, like, you're trying to talk, and it's just, like, bup, 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 and you're, like, trying to, like, rein it in. I feel like that's, like, what hit the hardest. I was just, like, right there? Kidding me? I understand that. I think that's like what works for this movie is like everyone everywhere is able to tap into some sort of like relatability to it. And whether it be if you're queer or straight, what have you, is like there's something for the parents, there's something for the kids. You know, this
is what executives actually mean when they say that something needs to be universally relatable and also incredibly specific. But like 99 out of 100 companies, if you sent this to them, they'd be like, get the fuck out of my face. Is, I think, very interesting. And, you know,
it's a four quadrant movie that actually like is for four quadrants, but has something for everyone.
He's also incredibly specific. And like, so, you know, the awards campaign was very long, but had some beautiful moments. And even though it's kind of like a wild speech that oscillates between a lot of different things, James Hong's speech at the SAG Awards, where he literally is like, I'm 94. My first movie was with Clark Gable. That was so cool. White people were in full-on yellow face, and they said that Asians did not bring the box office. But look at us now. Like, it gets me every time.
I mean, an icon, a legend.
Yeah. An icon, a legend, a star.
His speech was so incredible.
Yeah, and what are you gonna? You just gotta let James Hong talk. Like, let he's fucking waited 94 years. To be able to even talk in a room this size, which is insane. He did finally get his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. We love that.
We haven't. People do not know. Yeah,
we haven't even talked about Michelle yet.
I was gonna say we haven't even said her name.
I know. James Hong has been in I think over 450 like
films. He's
absolutely
so many movies.
The goat of all goats. But why I love that speech is because I think that it shows that any culturally loaded reason that a movie can't succeed is clearly incorrect, because this is a like very culturally specific story, but also incredibly universal and super weird, but financially viable and cleaned up. So, I mean, I don't know. I find this movie very like inspiring. I cannot see myself making this style of movie, but I find the like success, the successful path that it had, like very, very inspiring. If I was like a 15-year-old filmmaker watching this happen, I'd be like, fuck yeah.
I mean, as a queer kid, I think that would be like also really refreshing to see like a queer character so front and center, you know, like in this casual way where it's like it's about their queerness, but like it's not done in a way where it's like.
Yeah, I just my dad's side of the family is Lebanese. I literally took me until last year to start putting Middle Eastern characters in my scripts. Like I straight up never had any until literally last year.
See?
Yeah. Yeah. My manager wore me down. He was like, why aren't you doing this? I was like, because people like don't get it. And I also don't even know if I get it because I don't know what to write about. Like I have a very like weird specific relationship with that. He's like, who cares? Just write what feels authentic and don't worry about it. But it took me so long to be like, yeah, I can do that and I can feel comfortable doing that. And I don't feel like I'm automatically putting myself at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So.
The reason also, again, another reason I love this movie, just to hear something like that is, you know, if I would have saw a movie like this when I were a kid, maybe I would have continued the passion I had for film. But growing up, I never saw myself represented in film, like mainstream film. Or if we were, it was very like token in a sense. And then, you know, to add that layer of also being queer and feeling like I see it having positive representation in film. I think I was like 20 years old until I finally saw a good queer film. And it did just also happen to center around Asian Americans. And so I love that this film, and again, Parasite and like just all of these things, this makes it makes me happy to see that. But I will say, had I seen this back then, yeah, I would have been inspired to maybe continue with, like, I was that nerd who worked at a video store for years because I love movies.
OMG, Quentin Tarantino, who?
Like, I mean, I did. I had a huge passion for it, but I saw that and I was just like, there's never going to be a spot for me. And yeah, so you should definitely be putting more characters like that. Just do
it. Fuck yeah. No, I totally agree. But I think it's crazy how much this stuff can worm your way into your brain without you really thinking too much about it. And like, you know, being able to see something like succeed, and I don't just mean critically, I also really mean like financially. Getting to see something succeed financially means a lot.
Yeah.
So obviously you were saying with this, it's something, it's the four quadrant. Obviously everyone's always says like, oh, four quadrant, and this is actually the four quadrant that you want to say. But it's actually like, it is for Asian, it's for the Asian community, but it was for everyone at the same time. How do you feel that we're able to make it so that it is for everyone at the same time? Like, is there anything that stands out as being like, well, this is
like universal? That's a great question.
I was actually going to talk about, because I do think, I think Evelyn is actually the reason, even though it's rare to have a middle-aged woman being the front and center, I think having Michelle Yeoh and or like the parental figure is what is able to make it broader. Like, I think if Jobu Tabaki was your lead in this, or at least like Joy, I think it would have had less appeal for older audiences, like 30 plus. Whereas where like this movie fronting Evelyn, and not to say like the heterosexual structure, but it is like that her family structure is kind of like what broad audiences are able to tap into, because it is like a father, a mother, and a child. Like, that's your family. Yeah. And even if it's like this immigrant experience, even if it is, you know, for like the AAPI community, what have you, or even if it's like with a queer child, being able to like fit within what is the accepted family structure, I think is why you are able to have like more crossover. Whereas if it was like two dads, or it was like one mom, you know, like having kind of that basis, I think makes it a little bit more broad for people to tap into. At least that's what I think. Yeah. But
no, that is what I took away from it as well. Using the accepted narrative to bring in the, I don't want to say unaccepted, but like the thing that's difficult for the masses to swallow. Course. You bring in the what they like, and then you sneak that in the back.
I think the genre was like crucial too, that it's like, it's an action movie, it's also a romance movie, it's also a family drama, but it's funny at the same time. And obviously it's incredibly hard to hit like all of those balances, but like I'm such a fan of like action movies that are seen as more than like just pure popcorn entertainment, to show like what you can do with action. It's a tool, like fucking cinematography is a tool, like it's so visual.
It is. But some of us don't put Fast 10 at the bottom of our list for last year, so...
I did.
I see that on your letterbox. I was like, how dare she?
I tried. I was going in.
It's a fun film, but it's so bad. It's so bad.
Which is what makes it
great. I was
really
hoping.
Did you pay $20 for it, though, Liam?
No, because I have an unlimited card.
Would you pay $20?
Yes. I would pay more.
Liam, we're having
40.
You on for Fast.
Yeah, you gotta come back for the Fast franchise.
Obsessed.
I do have a question on this family like dynamic too. So, and this like was kind of like in reading and sticking in my head. Sorry to like, I don't want to be serious, right? Because this is a very silly.
You can
movie.
Be serious. It's a, like, it's also serious.
Yeah. But like with the, I think like through Evelyn, you know, Michelle Yeoh's character, etc. Like, I think presenting Joy as, I don't want to say like the queer child as burden, but it is very much like queer child is burden. And I do think that, not to be like that's a more accepted four quadrant thing, but I think for straight audiences, I wonder if like they were, if like Evelyn was just like pure, like obviously because like Jobu Tubaki, Joy, whatever, is the villain of the piece, but like the movie is not presenting the framework as like having a queer child is like a joyful thing. It is more like a stressor. And I do wonder if like Joy, if it was the movie wasn't focused on like the good parts of having like a queer child, like if that would frame it differently. I don't know if it would be four quadrant different or anything like that, but like the movie is not necessarily like painting the joys of having a queer child versus like the stresses that it can have.
For, I think like, it's kind of crucial for Evelyn to like be able to evolve in
that's
that
the
way.
Thing. That's the thing, yeah.
But also, I think that anyone can map, similarly to like anyone can map on the stress that their parents put on them as adults. Everyone sees their child as a burden in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except
that's actually,
me,
and it's
because
actually
I'm a perfect
not a bad
child,
thing.
And I've never been a burden to my parents at all.
Never, ever. Me neither.
A delusion.
Yeah. But like every parent, I think it's kind of essential that you see your child as a little bit of a burden, because
totally
you run into way more problems if you pretend that it's never difficult raising a child.
Right.
Even if you have a picture perfect child, you're still going to worry about them. You're still going to worry about like what the world is going to do to them, the choices they're going to make, how the world is changing, etc. So I think that, again, it's like, we're very lucky for this podcast that there's such like a textual queer element that we can like talk about straight up. But I also think like it's very applicable. It's almost like we've always been saying that queer movies are applicable to lots of different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
I go into it and I see things like this very differently, because I've never had what the media would present as the typical queer experience. Like, I wasn't unwanted because I was queer. I was unwanted because I was an unwanted pregnancy. Had nothing to do with the fact that I liked a dick.
Okay, T.
So, like, I've never had never had that experience, but I've seen others in my friend circle have that experience. So I've only ever looked at these things from an outside perspective. And I do think for this film in particular, even though it is showing the downsides of and struggles that queer children can have, it isn't showing it in a bad way, which is the usual, like, it's the exact same storyline as quite a lot of films if you think about it, but it's, well, not like overall, but like the
family,
queer child and family aspects, it's just done in such a different way than what we're used to seeing, because it's never, it's very rare that there's like a good resolve to the story, as you think of, like, so it never feels like it never feels like the queerness is the burden. It feels like it's accepted, but it's not accepted generationally, and it's trying to find the balance, where usually in these stories it's the child is queer and no one accepts them, where it's like, in my head that made sense, but then it came out of my mouth.
Yeah, and I think it did.
No. I totally get it. Yeah, I think that, again, that's what is so wonderful about this film. It's deeply specific and also very relatable. You can map on a huge variety of things onto it, but at the same time, it's putting stories that needed to be highlighted very front and center. There are two people that we haven't talked about. Perhaps the two, like, people that we will be most remembered for this movie. And that is Michelle Yeoh and Kihoi Kwan. Yeah. I mean,
we said their names 1 hour and 30 minutes into the podcast.
We've said them before.
Kihoi Kwan.
We're going in,
and we've said Evelyn.
Segments.
No, I love it.
All right. We're going in segments. I rewatched everyone's Oscar speeches in preparation for this episode.
Oh, that's cute. Oh God. I didn't know to do that.
You did. That was actually a requirement to come on the podcast. So please disconnect.
I watched it. I did cry. Yeah.
I did cry. I think that I'm so glad that the tide never turned on Kihoi Kwan being quote unquote too excited or too. I don't think it ever could. Like,
it would be like getting mad at an excitable puppy. You physically can't get mad. He's just so lovable. And it's beautiful to look at.
And you really feel like he's the kind of actor who, like, this award season obviously meant so much to and was also so transformative at the same time. And, like, I want everyone to do award season the way he did. Pure selfies. Unrestrained joy and selfies. And you do sometimes get people that are like, well, they want it too badly. Now we don't want to give it to them because they're too try hard. And I'm so happy that never happened, because I was like,
he's trying.
We really need this is, I want more of this energy in Hollywood where you're like, yeah, I'm a movie star and it's the coolest fucking thing in the entire world. And I can't believe that it's happening, but it is. And I'm going to enjoy it.
Also, like, literally, like, who cares if you won it? Like, he obviously wanted the award. And, like,
everyone wants a fucking Oscar.
Right. Like, literally, like, why are we dunking on a man for being like, I'm going to do all the press and everything that I can to win this thing? And who cares? Because, like, look, like, go for that gold, King. We will all stand for you. Yeah. Like, anyone who wants something, like, go fucking get it. Who fucking cares, you know?
Again, these, like, this is the Oscar is like the pivotal thing that you should want, because there's no reason why you shouldn't.
The second you get that, you are more bankable in a sense. Your quote goes up. Marketable. I don't think I ever heard him also like downplay any other film. I think he was just happy to be back in the conversation.
Yeah.
And you could just see his love for making film, and just when he says it was nice to finally see myself, or that I could, you know, I could be on screen again. Like, I was so happy. I probably would have cried if he lost, but every speech he gave hit home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it just, oh my gosh, you could just feel the love. And still, I remember, I think they panned either Steven Spielberg probably they panned to him and Harrison Ford during his speeches.
I think they missed both of them.
I thought that was just so like, wow.
The Oscars made two very good programming decisions. One was having to replace Will Smith with somebody, choosing Halle Berry because they basically rolled the dice on the fact that Michelle Yeoh was going to also have this very historic win, and so like that the first Black actress winner would be handing like her the trophy, and that they then had Harrison Ford announce Best Picture.
That was smart.
Because it was almost certainly a lock.
It's almost like the Oscars have rolled the dice before and not had it go well.
But when it works, it really does.
When it works, it works.
I think that Soderbergh just rolled the dice like too hard.
Too hard.
You know, like it was too big of a swing too uncertain of a year. It was just.
Wait, which film was this?
This was actually when Anthony Hopkins won Best Actor as opposed to Best Supporting.
Best Actor.
Chadwick Boseman.
Because they swapped Best Picture
and Best Actor which you don't do.
That was
what cursed them, is you should never not have Best Picture last. It just. Yeah.
Bad idea.
But it's awful, awful idea.
It was the instant cut of the. The Oscars is done. We're done. It's finished.
I remember that now. Really awful. And remember, Chadwick Boseman like wasn't in the In Memoriam because they were so sure that there was. I think there was like just a really shot of him. Well, they were so sure. Halle Berry could have given the Oscar to Cate Blanchett, and it would have been cool. Like there you go. Like okay, cool. But I think that. You know, they tipped their hat enough, but not too much. They didn't overplay it. Same with Harrison Ford. Like, it's very cool. You get to see him and Kikwai Kwan, like, hugging and, like, jumping around on stage. It's adorable.
How could anyone
If Harrison Ford isn't
getting mad at someone, the eternally grumpy man, you can't get mad at someone. If Harrison Ford's fine, everyone should be fine.
It's just, obviously, it's like a perfect role for him. I love that the Daniels thought of him for it. Like, Waymond, I think, matches his energy, and yet it's still such, like, a full-bodied and, like, three-dimensional performance. He's not just an excitable puppy in the movie. But that, like, you... Obviously, Michelle Yeoh is one of our greatest martial artists, but that you have Kihui Kwan, who's also, like, honestly and complete coincidentally, has studied this shit for, like... 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who was able to match up with her. Yeah.
Instead of studying the blade, he was studying the fanny pack, and it paid off in spades. You know, he was like, literally watch me whip this out. And we were like, King, you fucking did. Thank you.
It rocks.
If we are thinking about our podcast for the four quadrants, you know, I do think that it is like crazy to look at Kihi Kwan's career specifically and like how. The queerness or like what was being made then and looking like what is like a four quadrant thing now, like his, even in that like brief span of time, what has changed, like this movie being like a four quadrant movie with queerness up front and center is kind of amazing. And it is like very nice to see.
It's wild.
Like it get respected like that at the Oscars. So then you're like, where, like what happens next? Like, where can we go? Because like, who knows? And that's kind of exciting.
We're still it's still soon enough after this like huge push that we don't know if it means that people are going to want to see more martial arts films or more like weird shit or more like, you know, non-traditional families. Like it, Hollywood takes the weirdest fucking
so much
lessons
time
from success and from successful stuff. They'll just be like, oh, of course, what people want is more multiverse movies. That's really what we learned here today.
But when's the last martial arts film that was like really, I think that, which is funny because I think the last martial arts film that had the biggest awards push and actually won as well starred Michelle Yeoh.
Crouching Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Good movie.
I don't think there's ever been one like as mainstream. I still think that's the highest film here.
I mean, the fact that that thing broke through and like it's the run that it went on is like unprecedented.
I love that movie so much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that film so much. It's so good.
Yeah.
What if there was a Crouching Tiger
And she should have been nominated for that, by the way.
A Hidden Dragon. I totally agree. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, she's great. We talked about Cate Blanchett so much on our awards episode.
I wasn't going to say it, but I was like, honestly, like, she could lose because she won a quali, you know?
Yeah, she won a QQ quali, and that's all that matters. But I, in every universe, I would have given this award to Michelle Yeoh because I really do think that, like, when it comes to the Oscars specifically, the narrative matters. It does. And sometimes the narrative kind of fucking sucks. And you're like, well, whatever. Like, I disagree with this. But, like, in this case, the narrative was for an incredible, like, career-defining performance, something where Michelle Yeoh got to do everything under the sun, got to be funny, got to be like
she's
sexy,
really funny,
got
in
to
this.
Be real, got to be an action star. She's so funny, underrated.
Yeah,
like
good
underrated
comedy chops.
How funny she is.
Yeah, she's really good.
I think she's almost the funniest character.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
she just her line delivery.
I think her timing. Yeah,
her timing. Yeah. Yeah.
Her like. She's the funniest in that like opening third where she's just like literally like nope, not doing
and,
this. Like
you do not
stop.
Want to fight me. I am very good. Is great and the can't help you.
Yeah.
Too busy. It's great. I just her Oscar speech is also amazing.
It's really
I feel
sweet.
Like her crowning moment is when she says, "Ladies, never let anyone tell you that you're past your prime."
Oh, love
and
that.
And everyone applauds.
Slay, mama.
It's great. I really
some mother
again,
mothering. Yeah.
It's so deserving. I really think that this film goes down in history as like something that did not really rob a lot of other films of like deserved Oscars, you know. Except for maybe supporting actress, but
I'm gonna say supporting actress. Like
self-sabotage.
Well, I think that's the such annoying thing about that the supporting actress category. Because you had three actresses in that category, but like Daphne would have been in that, should have won.
Yeah.
Angela Bassett should have won. And it's, you've got these two competing things of both of these people should win. Right. Well, so clearly the third person's going to sneak in, which is Jamie Lee Curtis. And it's like, you know, like, I feel bad. Because I understand why she got it. Like, if you look at it on a basis of, you look at the narrative, like, obviously, you look with Michelle Yeoh, you look at the narrative, and it's a career-defining role, but she got it. With Jamie Lee Curtis, you've got a case of, he's never really had a role that could get her close enough to the Oscars, but she's been in so much and been doing so much, and she's... Yes, she's a nepo baby, but like it's not really like she's deserved it in her own right, kind of. And it's this probably is the only chance she's ever gonna get it, actually getting that Oscar. So yeah, probably give it to her, but it hurts that it has to be at the expense
it
of.
Does.
And it's like. It's just such a confusing... It was such a confusing category. Like, you just did not know what to do or how it should play out. Someone was going to be let down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that life, you know? Aren't we all always let down?
Yeah.
All the time.
You just got to put everything on a bagel and cut your losses.
I mean, honestly, look. If this movie did anything, it's like huge for the Everything Bagel community. Like, we are out here every day, boots on the ground, pushing the Everything Bagel narrative. And this movie was like, we see you, we hear you, we are your ally, we have to stand.
I've never had an Everything Bagel.
I am more of a sesame gal myself.
Interesting. I'm an everything through and through. Always everything front, you know? It works better. Egg, bacon, egg,
I
cheese.
I do also like to have everything at the front, but I've never had it on a bagel.
Wrap it up. So a movie that's like about the burden of capitalism and how capitalism can like entangle a family and leave you like isolated and harmful to your child. Was the capitalist movie succeeded? Let's say
it made
money.
$111 million worldwide.
No, 143.
A24's, really?
143 worldwide.
Well, I love that.
77 in the US.
Incredible. It is still A24's highest grossing movie by like 30 mil.
What's closest?
Or something. Lady Bird is number two at 48 million domestic.
Oh, wow.
Where's the claw? Where's the claw?
Iron Claw is currently sitting at number six.
Okay.
The Iron Claw hasn't had an international run yet, though. Not fully. No,
still?
I'm mostly looking at domestic for A24 box office, mostly because that is what the numbers.com gives me. But number 10, we have The Witch. Number 9, Midsommar. Number 8, Ex Machina, my personal favorite. Number 7, Moonlight. Number 6, The Iron Claw. Number 5, Talk to Me. Number 4, Hereditary. Number 3, Uncut Gems. Although it looks like Uncut Gems made more than Lady Bird, so I don't know what's up with that.
Is this on the numbers?
Yeah. Number 1, Everything Everywhere.
The numbers were fucking coming for you. Fix your shit.
Stay strapped or get caught. But yeah, I mean, it was so successful. It made everyone a lot of money and improved everyone's careers by a lot. It's kind of like the ultimate success story. I know that I've basically been nothing but complimentary, and it's because I really feel like this is the film that for 20 years I'm gonna be like, yeah, that really deserved
that ripped.
The insane run that it had. I really do think it did, because it's like, while I don't think that this is like my favorite movie ever, I would not consider myself like an Everything Everywhere obsessive the way that some people are. I've only seen it twice, but like I will always, I think, ride really hard for this movie's like narrative and success and like the context in which it was made and like what happened for it.
What did this get on Letterboxd, Brooke?
Would you care to guess, Jordan?
So here's the thing. I know that this is the second most popular movie we have ever covered. Barbie beeped in front of it. I know that everyone lost their goddamn minds when this was like the highest rated movie on Letterboxd and caused a complete meltdown. So I'm gonna guess that this has a 4.4. That feels too insane, but I'll go for it. 4.4.
Okay, Liam, you talk. Either of you care to put in?
So it's a 5 scale, right?
I
barely 4.3.
Don't. Okay.
I'm still gonna go with a 4.7.
No.
One of you.
4.1. I think with time, if we're looking at it now, I think with time, people might have brought it down a little bit from the...
I'm going to bring mine down to a 4.3.
All right. Well, Liam, you should have stuck with your original instinct. Jordan, I'm not giving you brownie points because I think that you only said
that. I saw your reaction.
Yeah. So I really am actually not going to give this one to you because I would consider that cheating. It's a 4.3.
Wow. Okay. The Price is Right rules don't apply to this, okay?
No.
You know what?
I'm adding
Fair.
It to my list.
No, you shouldn't. But it is a 4.3. 2.5 million people have seen this movie. It has 555,000 reviews. It is really
crazy
fucking popular. And people like it. We'll see how it ages. I think it ages very good. But hey, you know, we'll check it in 20 years. See what's up. More importantly, where do we think this is landing on the QQ?
Lead us off.
Oh, you want me to... it's boring. I'm going to give it 5 stars. I think that this is a film that really like pushes accepting your queer kids, like being a family. I think this is a movie that really like pushes queer text and subtext to the forefront, whereas the movie, like the character arcs, the themes couldn't exist without it. I think a version of this movie could, but like, it's not the movie that it is without that. And, you know, Joy and Evelyn, like, not just their relationship, but themselves as individual characters really, like, imbue that theme. It's great. I really have no notes. I'm going to give it 5 stars. Jordan?
It is everything that we have, like, looked for. It's a four quadrant movie. It's fronting queerness. It's doing it in a fun way. It's, like, so much about it is, like, the relationship between parent and queer child, and I think, like, I will inherently buy into that. Even if it's, like, not necessarily my experience, I think that there's something inherently, like, relatable about that, and I think that it is done with a sincere and open heart, and, like, that's kind of something that I love so dearly. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We kind of talked about it. Yeah, 5 stars. Of course. Yeah.
Great. Liam Yutaka, who wants to go first?
Age before beauty.
That's fair. That's fair.
Or pigs before farmers.
Damn.
Oh. Gagged. Gagged.
D-A-M-N.
Damn.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, 5 stars. I think one of my favorite things about this is that we also don't get negative stereotypes that you see so much in queer cinema sometimes, to where this, again, like you said, it's very sincere. And I also think it was just, I don't know, it had like a sense of realism tied to it, and maybe, again, very relatable. And I really appreciate that type of storytelling, because to be honest, I'm certainly sick of the, oh, my lover died of such and such, or they were murdered, or this was just something nice to see and take us still on a fantastical journey. And yeah, so 5 stars for me.
Good times. I will also go 5 because of everything you have already said, plus the fact that we have the most delightful scene in cinema of a lesbian eating the shit out of cops with a 12-inch dildo. Nothing That's is true. Going to be gayer than that.
That's true. We haven't talked about
that
it.
That is
yeah.
so
That's
true. Valid. And then, like, yeah. what? Head exploding with confetti?
Glitter.
Yeah,
it's a yeah. slime mama.
That is a beautiful cherry on top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Also, like, we didn't even talk about, like Gong Gong at the end, like, accepting the girlfriend, and, like,
yeah.
that little beat is actually,
yeah.
like, very tender and really sweet.
Yeah.
yeah.
I can't believe I didn't say this, but the list of queer actors that were nominated for Academy Awards for playing queer roles is very, very short. And Stephanie Hsu is on there because
she is a queer woman.
Yeah. It is not a long list at all. So fucking shout out. I can't wait to see what she does next. Congratulations, Everything Everywhere All at Once. You have joined the Rainbow Standard. Insert theme music here. It's deserved.
That's beautiful.
Deserved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Another award to it, you know? Why not?
Just add it. The most award movie of all time. Liam Yutaka, thank you so much for being here and joining us.
Thank you for having us.
This was...
this is a
pleasure. Everyone should listen to the Horror Hour, but give the audience a little update. What are you guys up to? What's going on? What do you want to plug? All of the things.
Would you like me to do the usual, Yutaka?
You do the best when it comes to the plugging.
Okay. So, well, we are the Horror Hour, so we are horror homos. Plus one straight that we have to just let in for water purposes.
Diverse hire.
Of course.
We are on YouTube, Spotify, all that jazz. We are also the Horror Hour TV on X and Twitter. No, X is Twitter now. X and Instagram. At the moment, we don't have anything specific coming up. We just have our weekly episodes, but they are very fun. We do think all things horror and try and sneak in as much
filth
butt play as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like that, come on over and join us for an hour.
As you should. Huge fan. Great. Always a wonderful listen. Really feels like, I don't know, you guys feel like my friends. I mean, you are my friends, but listening to you feels like listening to a round table of my friends. It's very lovely. The vibes are immaculate. You can also find us hanging out on the internet, basically every social media you can think of. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together, Queer Quadrant. You can find the podcast on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Drop us a rate. 5 dildos only. Just going to say it. Drop us a review. Tell us about your multiverse experiences. And, you know, subscribe if you want to hear more of whatever the fuck you want to call this.
A beautiful podcast across multiverses?
And you can also tweet at us, find us on Instagram, let us know your thoughts about this movie. Please try to stay away from the sensitive discourse topics, okay? My poor brain can't handle it anymore. And let us know what you might like to see us cover in the future.
And Brooke, what are we covering in the future?
2 weeks from today, we are talking about Carrie, the original with none other than Cass Clark. We're having a little horror trivia reunion of sorts. It's going to be a good time.
Movie rips. Honks, slaps, whips.
It really does. So you can join us in 2 weeks for that.
And Brooke, in another universe, what do you think our podcast would have been about?
The Muppets.
Fuck. Why? That sounds like such a better multiverse to be in.